Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. I remember back in the day, at the risk of sounding a bit cliche, that every organization had that one go-to guy or go-to gal that everyone could rely on. But the world today is far more complex, as I'm sure we can all agree. We're experiencing rapid change and constant disruption, and it makes it nearly impossible for just one person to know it all or even know enough. And that's why collaboration isn't just helpful anymore. It's essential. Fortunately, we have with us today an individual with extensive experience in collaboration both inside and outside the Toastmasters world. Monique Levesque-Farrow is the Director of Development for Peer Connections Manitoba and the owner of Unique Communications and Training. She's a highly experienced presenter and facilitator who brings training to life with her energetic approach and real-life work examples. Monique holds a certificate in human resources management with honors and has expertise in employee development, communication, and leadership. She was recently recertified as a conflict mediator through Mediation Services. Her philanthropic and fundraising efforts include working with the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation, the Health Sciences Foundation, and now Peer Connections Manitoba. Monique has been a Toastmaster since 1994, serving as a past district governor, past region advisor, and past international director. She's also a member of two clubs, Winnipeg Chamber Toastmasters and Vital Words in Winnipeg. Monique was quoted as a subject matter expert in Karen Neal's article, The Power of Collaboration. Everyone wins when individuals team up and tap into each other's talents. And that article can be found in the July 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Monique Levesque-Farrow, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thanks so much, Greg. So happy to be here.
Oh, it's great. Of course, we're talking about collaboration and we've collaborated in the past.
We have.
Somewhere in the late 2000s, our district, I was in district 42 at the time, you were 64 sister districts.
Mm-hmm. And 2009 was a great year because you'll recall, Greg, that almost all of us were distinguished districts that year. And I truly believe it was the collaboration that was born from our partnerships, our conversations, and our connections.
We will certainly touch upon that. Now, when I thought about the title of the article and particularly the subtitle, I just thought exactly what you mentioned. I thought about that time that we worked together. But of course, I have to admit, first and foremost, I immediately thought of the hockey season and the Edmonton Oilers who made it to the playoff finals, my home team. But sadly, they didn't make it. But if you think about it, you think about the collaboration that's needed amongst players and coaches to be successful. So to kick things off, Monique, could you please define collaboration and how does that differ from perhaps a strategic alliance or maybe even just teamwork?
What collaboration does is it brings the best of all of us together. I think that there's that saying that when you bring together all these great minds, you have a better outcome. And collaboration allows for that magic to happen. So for me, it's about bringing together, sometimes it's people who have the same passion and same goals, but different ideas on how to get there. And so you get to a higher place on that summit as a result of everyone's collective passion.
What about strategic alliance?
I think strategic alliance is also important. I think what's really nice about strategic alliance is if you've got collaborators in the mix, you will take that strategic alliance even further. Sometimes our strategies are a full-on match. Sometimes in some ways there's a great match and in other ways it can appear divergent, but with collaboration, you can get to a common place. And a strategic alliance, and an example would be, is our strategic alliance with Rotary International. What was interesting in dialogue around that strategic partnership around the board table, of which I was a part of at that time, there were a lot of Toastmasters who were already Rotarians. And that desire to support community definitely is there in both of our mandates. What's interesting is, what I have seen is I've heard from Toastmasters directly. I've seen on Facebook and Instagram all the different ways they have come together, whether it's speaking at a community club, whether it's starting to bring in Rotarians as Toastmasters, or simply getting the word out about the great organizations and what we both do. It's all part of that strategic alliance.
Yeah, super. So thanks for clarifying that. When we talk about collaboration, I mean, the obvious benefits are things that are mutually beneficial. We have more people, you have more experience to pull from. What are some of the other benefits, and perhaps what are some of the successful ingredients that go into a good collaboration?
I would say first and foremost is that posture of curiosity, understanding that you don't know everything when you come to the table, and that you really have to come with that open mind and that understanding that there are pieces of the puzzle that you won't have unless you have that open mind. I would say another really important piece of collaboration is patience, because collaboration often will slow down the process, but it makes the end result all the more sweeter when everyone's voices are heard. We've been inclusive. We've invited those diverse mindsets. I feel that process and that journey of collaboration is a benefit in and of itself. But when you get to the end goal and it's all that sweeter, it's an even better outcome.
We've always heard the phrase, too many cooks spoil the broth. What are some of the challenges that collaboration brings about?
Well, one of the ways in which, and this reminds me of something that I experienced while serving on the board and being part of a committee, and past international president Lark Doley did something that I thought was really profound. What she did in, of course, in an actual setting, if you're in the room, it's a little easier. You give everyone a few tokens. And once you've used your tokens, you wait until everybody's tokens have been used. So you really tease out the voice of everyone. Because we know that when we collaborate, you can have people who are extreme extroverts like myself, who are gregarious like myself, who are not shy to share their ideas. But two seats down, you might have someone who has the perfect idea, but is not willing to share because they don't have that space and time needed to reflect, put their thoughts together, and chime in. So I would say that is something that really sat with me, and I use it all the time in a virtual setting. You can just literally make a little chart and have a check mark that lets you know when someone has put in their input or has talked or had something to say about what it is you're talking about. And then if someone else is wanting to share, say a third time, say, can you please note that down? I want to make sure we hear from everyone before we move on to additional comments. And it can feel like it slows people down, but trust me when I tell you, you are going to feel the benefits. People are going to feel heard and seen, and they're going to be more engaged in part of the process and the victory.
Oh, that's excellent. A perfect example of collaboration, and it's also mentioned in the article, was during your term as International Director 2016-2018. Can you please tell us a little bit about that project and what kind of collaboration was it?
Thank you for asking about that, Greg. So when I was on the board, I had a confession to make, and that was I did not know that there was a disciplinary committee. And what the disciplinary committee did was really handle conflicts that had escalated and really were centered around Protocol 3.0, which is all around our ethics and, you know, how we operate as an organization and individuals within the organization. When we were looking at that, I asked the question, where's the mediation committee? So I was then tasked by past international president Ted Corcoran to set up a subcommittee. And I was very happy to see that Andy Little and Christy Cruz were just as passionate as myself. We put together a proposal around what that could look like. And what was great is it was submitted to the board. And from that proposal stemmed the District Leader Conflict Working Group. And that was led by the late, great Chris Ford, also a past international president. He was a peacekeeper and as a result had a lot of work in his repertoire around collaboration, building trust, connection, and making sure that people heard one another. And so from that District Leader Conflict Working Group, we did a lot, first of all, research on what does conflict look like? How is it that the collaboration of district leaders is falling apart? And how can we help them build that trust early on and build a way to communicate with one another so that when they do come across conflict, which I must say, and of course, Neil Wilkinson, past international president, worked in healthcare for many years. He would always say, and I loved this phrase, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so how do we get to those district leaders in a way that lets them understand not all conflict is bad, but let's get to that conflict before it becomes unhealthy. And the work we did on that committee was just really a joy. It's one of my Toastmaster highlights to be around other district leaders who felt so passionate about helping not just our district leaders, our region advisors, our club leaders, people who are thinking to jump into leadership and give them the tools they need to succeed, to collaborate and avoid that unhealthy conflict.
Wow. I was not aware that there was such a protocol or a committee, and it seems like it's something that's really needed in every organization, not just Toastmasters. Monique, I'm wondering, when you formed this committee, how did you decide which people to have on your team?
Well, in this particular instance, it was a very easy match because when I, stated my question about what is being done around mediation, we had leaders like Andy and Christy who were, yes, I'm passionate about that as well. So it was an easy coming together of the minds. But what was interesting was when we were working on our proposal, while we all agreed that there needed to be something, we all had different ideas of what that could look like. So the proposal that was put forth was far more robust if I had done it on my own, if Andy had done it on his own, or Christy had done it on her own. And so I learned from that even when you have like-minded individuals, you're going to have differences of opinion on how to get to the same place you all want to get to.
So this experience, you had extensive experience coming into this project. I know it's been a few years, but was there one particularly big takeaway for you from that experience?
Oh, there were so many. So working on the group, Sal Assad brought so much to the table in the way of process. He helped create a roadmap that allowed district leaders to quickly look at where you are in the process of conflict. And I found that to be really interesting because it's not something I would have enjoyed doing. It is not something I would have even thought of. But once I saw the document, I was pretty excited to see it because I could see in the shoes of a district leader, it would be very helpful. Another learning I would say I had was I was very, very, very lucky to be part of a group that led a communication model called the interaction model. And what I learned from that interaction model is each time I facilitate it, districts will invite me to, their conferences or a district leader training. And I always come away feeling excited that someone has got a new tool in their toolbox to help navigate conflict and help build collaboration as a result of avoiding that conflict.
Wow. It's amazing how no matter how much experience you have in something, there's always some takeaways you can learn.
Always, always. And I think that is the part of Toastmasters that ties in so beautifully to collaboration because so many Toastmasters, like myself, like you, Greg, are lifelong learners. And to subscribe to that theory is to really be open to that constant learning and that collaboration.
Yeah. You're also bringing out the points, sort of a side note here, is that how people communicate also impacts the collaboration.
Oh my goodness. That is one thing that I constantly learn. An example I would share with you is a work example. I am not necessarily a texter, but I have become a texter because I've worked with individuals that are like, Monique, can you just shoot me that text? And then I'm adapting to their communication style. The idea of me sending a text, honestly, before voice to text, Greg, it could take me a long time. I've got five thumbs, I think. But adapting to what other people really enjoy or resonate with, I think is also a learning opportunity.
Oh, I'm just thinking about how Siri interprets my text, my voice to text.
Oh my goodness. One of my favorites is there's a commercial, I think it's for Benadryl, cold and flu medicine. And she's doing a voice to text to her boss. And she's so plugged up, it translated to, I'm in bed with a bad clown.
Monique, in the beginning, you touched upon a collaboration success in your year as district governor, now district director, back in 2009, related to Region 4. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Definitely. So one thing I want to really punctuate is this is prior to region advisors. This is prior to region advisor organized peer calls. And our peer calls sort of came about organically. We had Doug Doughty, and then we had Joan McCauley, Joan Watson, who recently passed. My condolences to her family. We had Pat Hannon, Arlene Pearsall, myself. What we did is we realized, oh, geez, this district leadership, this at that time, it was called the Lieutenant Governor of Marketing, now called Club Growth Director. We knew it was a beast and we knew we needed to make the load lighter. And so we would strategize and collaborate and share best practices and take a sticky situation and let's role play on how we're going to get this organization or this company to come on board with Toastmasters. Whatever it was building that trust and building that collaboration. And when it came down to the end, unfortunately, there was one district, Doug's district had terrible flooding that year. He and his district were on track to be distinguished. And had that been the case, it would have been 6 out of 6. But what I learned from that is the power of coming together. And it's actually ties into where I work, which is peer support. And living that experience with others lightens the load and makes you better at what you do.
And you did that by meeting monthly.
We met monthly, as well as we shared messages of hope and congratulations. And if we needed support, you know, within that month, we would just literally put out a note and say, okay, I need some support. Here's what I need. And we would come together.
In general, I'm thinking that collaboration is necessary. It's imperative. But yet, we're in a very competitive world. Everyone is competing for that one trophy, that one position, that one piece of recognition. And I'm sure it's happened, like this happens in organizations, or people are keeping secrets and keeping things close to their chest. Is there one particular strategy or technique that you use to help people see that collaboration, it's really a good thing?
You bring about a very interesting point. And I think it ties to the abundancy versus scarcity theory. Collaboration feeds into that abundancy theory. There's enough success for all of us to go around. An example I would share is I know that there's clubs out there that are looking for members. And, you know, a lot of times districts will be, it's that two-headed beast, will be spending time on building clubs. And what's really fascinating to me is when you subscribe to the scarcity theory, you actually are limiting your own club growth. Let me give you an example. I belong to Vital Words, as we mentioned. It was the first club in St. Vital, an area in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And we had the market covered as far as St. Vital area went. And we had a bank that wanted to start a club of their own. And so many club members were up in arms. They're like, we're going to lose members to this banking club. Now people aren't going to come on a Wednesday night. Oh no, what are we going to do? I gave a presentation on the abundancy theory and shared my ideas that perhaps the opposite is true. That yes, you have that competition to grow. But guess what? We can all grow. Toastmasters energy is much like the sun. It's ever renewing. The more people that have it and are successful, the more people who want it. So about a month after this presentation and a month after this club chartered, we got 3 members from the bank who did not want to be in the club during business hours because their jobs were just so busy. And one member even shared that they felt shy about going through the Toastmasters experience with colleagues and their boss in the room. So we actually gained 3 new members. So here you have that competition, but with collaboration and thinking about that abundant mindset, we can all win.
Wow. Toastmasters is like the sun. Now that's a pretty bright observation.
It is.
I love that. You're full of stories, Monique. I noticed in the article you mentioned this geese analogy. Tell us about that.
Oh my goodness. I, to this day, think of Ray McIsaac and Katrina Younger. They were in the trio team alongside me when I was serving the role of district director. And we had a game plan. The year prior, when Robert Legarry was district director, we were just shy by 25 member payments to be a distinguished district. But he left us off in such a great place, a strong pipeline. And with the team dynamics that we had, it was collaboration all the way. We would have dinner meetings with the division directors. We were fortunate at that time in District 64 to have all division directors close enough that I could cook for them once a month. What was interesting was that was my New Year's resolution that year, Greg. Prior to 2009, I'd maybe cooked about five meals, and I didn't think it was fair to ask my husband to cook for everyone. So I learned to cook so that I could cook for this team. And the collaboration from these dinner meetings, we built that trust. We built that connection. And we were chugging along. Every once in a while, one of us would be nervous and feel like, if you were to liken it to those, that flock of geese would be like, I'm too tired to take the lead. I'm having a few doubts. Maybe this club didn't charter as quickly. Maybe I didn't think that, I thought we'd have more club officers trained by now. Oh, I'm not sure about, you know, clubs and their reports. Whatever it was that someone was struggling with, another member of the team would fly in that front of that formation. I'm getting actually a little choked up. But there were times when, as district director, you're feeling like you have to be at the front of that formation the whole year through. But the art of collaboration means that you don't. It means that you can take a break, fly to the back of the flock, and see other leaders take charge and see other leaders fly that formation to success. Wouldn't have happened otherwise.
I can picture that. I can certainly picture that.
You know, when we became a distinguished district, I'm dating myself, but it was actually on my 40th birthday. It was with the building of the club I still believe, I'm still a believer of and a member of, is We Believe in Winnipeg Toastmasters Club, which is the Winnipeg Chamber Toastmasters Club you talk about. I did not want to join that club unless I was more than the 20th member. Because I did not want the optics to be, oh, here's the district director joining a club to be a distinguished district. And I did not want to join for those reasons. And so I was very happy to be a chamber member that was, I believe I was club member number 23. And that club is still going strong. It's an incredible club that has a few members that are alongside me that are the members that helped start the club. But the new members that are there now, I never would have foreseen where We Believe in Winnipeg and the Toastmasters Chamber would get our members. We have members chairing business meetings. We have members doing podcasts. We have members who are leaders in our community that swear by their experience with We Believe in Winnipeg Toastmasters.
Wow. Talking about dating yourself, let's turn the clock back a little and tell us a little bit about what brought you into Toastmasters in those early days. And I understand there's a little story that's, let's say, led to a lifelong collaboration.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I, like many young people, had a lot of weddings to go to, and I was asked to give a toast to the bride for a friend. I felt very ill-prepared, and thank goodness I walked into Vital Words Toastmasters. Shara Hinton, this is a very interesting story. I was at a play with a mutual friend, Lynn, who was actually a member of your district, District 42, Lynn Tibbs, and she invited me to a play alongside Shara Hinton. We were going to go out after, and she said, I'm so sorry, I can't. I've got to make lasagna for my Toastmasters Club. And I said, hey, what's Toastmasters? I think I need that. So she brought me to a meeting in January of 1994, a few weeks after Don Farrow, you might recognize that in my last name, gave a speech that was so profound and so beautiful that I literally fell in love at first speech. What was interesting, I was dating four guys at the time, and I came home and my mom was, you know, getting frustrated because she had confused two of them. And she said, "That's it. You got to make a choice." And I said, "I choose Don." And she goes, "See, I didn't even know Don was one of them." And I said, "He wasn't. He's a guy I met tonight at Toastmasters." And so, yeah, I still get goosebumps thinking about it. 3 months later, he asked me out. What happened was he was an evaluator for my speech, and he would call about my speech and we would talk about my speech. We spent hours, and I thought, boy, these Toastmasters, they take their evaluation seriously. The evaluator for my next speech, her name was Hope Mattis. And I said to her, so when are we going to do coffee and talk about my speech? She goes, "Lord child, Don is in love with you. I'm not taking you out for coffee. I'm willing to do a phone call or two." And shortly after, Don asked me out, and we've been together ever since.
So welcome to the Toastmasters tell-all.
Exactly. But the beautiful thing about Toastmasters, and I tell people this all the time, is when you connect with someone on a cerebral level and you really learn about them through their speeches, you can form a deep connection that transcends, you know, a regular first, second, or third date. You get into that first date knowing more about that person than you would meeting them any other way.
Right. But sometimes miscommunication occurs while dating.
Oh my goodness. Are you talking about the U2 experience?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I heard about that.
This was honestly, you know, those early days when you're talking on the phone and you're talking to the wee hours of the morning. And I could have sworn I heard Don say, "Monique, I love you." I panicked, and it's, I think, maybe 4 a.m. And I panic, and I realized I loved him too. And I said, "I love you too." And his response was not what I anticipated. He said, "Oh," as if I changed the subject. "Yeah, they're a great band. What's your favorite album?" And I scramble to my CD tower, pull out my U2 discs, and we end up talking for about an hour about Joshua Tree. I don't know how long afterwards, I think we were engaged by the time I shared with him that I thought he had said he loved me. And when a week later, when he did say he loved me, when we were together in person, I was scared to say, "I love you too," because I thought, the jig will be up. He'll figure me out. So instead of saying, "I love you too," I said, "I'm falling for you as well."
I guess you didn't discuss the song, "I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For," because you did.
And one would argue that when we renew our vows every 5 years, and I can tell you that "Beautiful Day" has definitely been a song that we both love since meeting.
Oh, that's incredible. Folks, again, welcome to the Toastmasters tell-all. If you've had a good chuckle and if now you're in love with you too, I encourage you to share this episode with friends, family, and fellow Toastmasters. You never know what might happen. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcast. Monique, this has been absolutely delightful. And if people want to hear a little bit more about collaboration, maybe they want to get a few more juicy tidbits on your life, how can they reach you?
Well, I've got two emails. There's my email at Yahoo, which is mlpharoah at yahoo.ca. And then my Toastmasters email is mlevesque-pharoah at toastmasters.org.
Sounds great. And we'll certainly put that link in the show notes. Monique Levesque Farrow, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And folks, don't forget to check out Karen Neal's article, "The Power of Collaboration," subtitled "Everyone Wins When Individuals Team Up and Tap into Each Other's Talents." And you can find that in the July 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Monique Levesque Farrell, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Greg, you are so good at what you do. I literally felt like we were in two armchairs and there was a fireplace behind us. Thank you so much for making this so much fun.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back.